Welcome to Authors First on the Artists First Radio Network, artistsfirst.com. Tony Kaye in the studio. Thanks for joining us, everyone worldwide. If you're an author, independent recorded artist, or famous personality, we'd love to hear from you. Simply follow the links we've provided on our homepage, artistsfirst.com. All broadcasts available in MP3 format, available free on demand with a library of over 5,000 hours. So feel free to share our material on your social network sites, Facebook, and other locations on the web. This hour, it's my privilege to introduce author Kimberly Sherrell, author of Silent Tears, 2009, and Wet Whisperers, 2012. To learn more about Kimberly and her books, you can visit the website www.sherrell, sherrell.com. Let's give a warm Artist First welcome to our guest. How do you do, Kimberly?
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, I'm fabulous, Kimberly. I have the best job in the world because I get to meet interesting people like you. And tell our audience a little bit about where you call home. And then I'd like to know, have you always been a writer? Is this something that from your earliest memory you can recall doing?
Okay, well, right now, home is in Grayson, Kentucky, which is in northeastern Kentucky. I'm about 15, 20 miles from the West Virginia and Ohio state line. But home in my heart is in southwest Georgia, hence the accent. A small town called Sylvester, Georgia, which is very, very south, very southern down in Georgia. It's probably only about an hour maybe from the Florida, Alabama line. So I'm a Southern Belle, and I love that about myself. And I would say I was born a writer. I would say that when God formed me in heaven, he gave me the talent of writing. My earliest memory of actually writing, I was 6 years old, and I was writing little short one-act plays, and I was writing very short poems at the time. I don't remember any of those that I've written. I've seen the paper. My grandmother still has them as far as the poems, but I do remember the little one-act plays because I was basically the only girl in a family full of boys. And whenever I didn't want to climb trees and jump ditches with them, I would play in my room, and I would create all of these fantastic characters that I wished lived near me that I was able to play with. And so I would write these little plays about what we would actually do if we ever encountered each other in the real world.
Wow. That's incredible. So your earliest recollection really centers around your ability to think and write. And do you do that in rhyme? In other words, was the rhythm a part of your early life, early experience too? Were you getting that from your family? What were you seeing around you, do you think, that created that rhythm, that desire to be a poet and to think and write in that fashion?
I would have to say that it really came from my parents just instilling a burning desire to learn. And so I was basically a sponge sort of soaking up everything that I could. And I always loved books, and the characters, you know, would fascinate me. But I wanted to take it a step further. I didn't just want to read about other characters. I wanted to create my own. I was just born with this sense of creativity that I sort of got from my mother. She is not a writer, but she is extremely crafty and creative. She used to make all types of decorative baskets and bows, and she even made jewelry for a while. And so she's very creative. She's the person you want to help you do posters and projects and things from school. And so I had that love of writing and that the creative side, it sort of came from her, you know, just watching her do something that she was good at. And I very early on realized that writing was something I was not only good at, but I did enjoy.
Both your mother and grandmother cultivated and understood that artistic interest.
Yes, they did. And I think on the flip side of that, they actually enjoyed the fact that it gave me something to do that didn't involve bugging them.
Because they had their hands busy.
Yes, they had their hands busy with all of the boys in the family and other things, and I always felt a little left out, you know, at times being surrounded by boys. It's great when you have a flat tire and you need, you know, someone to put gas in your car, but you don't always want to just hang with the boys, and so the writing just gave me that freedom to really be myself in my own little world, and I wasn't, you know, constantly nagging my mother and my grandmother to, you know, take me places where I could be with other girls. I just wrote about the girls that I would like to play with.
Did you think about your family and write about them? In other words, in your daily journaling, were family activities a part of that writing?
They were. I can remember, and this is the first poem that I actually can remember writing. I wrote a poem about my little cousin, Mario. I remember when he came home from the hospital, and he was this little tiny baby, and I thought he was so cute. And I was, at the time he was born, I was 8 years old, and I wrote a poem about him just out of the blue because I just thought he was so cute. It was a little short poem. It was only about 4 or 5 lines. And I wrote about him, and I would write about other family members that I didn't know, that I've heard stories about. And so I would sort of retell the stories that I heard from older family members in my poetry.
Were you extroverted or introverted growing up?
Well, I don't know. I think I was probably a little bit more of a balanced mix of the two. It really sort of depends on who you would ask. I love to say that I'm shy and I am a thinker, but no one in my family really believes that about myself. Everybody thinks that I am this militant, outspoken social butterfly. And I think that when pushed, I am. It just really depends on certain settings because there are times when I would be around a group of people and I would be the center of attention, and there were other times when I really didn't want to be noticed.
So when you were at school, obviously you had opportunity and classes to shine and because you'd been writing for a while. So it should have been a little easier perhaps for you in reading and writing to excel in classes. Was that the case?
I did excel in class always, as long as I can remember. As long as I wanted to excel. There were a couple of times when I really didn't want to, so I just really didn't. But I was always, you know, the star student, especially when it came to writing assignments and projects. That was my specialty. And once I was, you know, a little bit higher up in school and there were more assignments that involved a little bit more written creativity, that was really my platform. But even with it being my platform, I still find myself being a little bit nervous and shy about sharing the things that I had written and the things, you know, the projects and things that I actually put together. I was always in front of an audience, but for some reason, stage fright never went away. To this day, I still suffer from a bit of stage fright. No one notices it really but me and a couple of people that know me extremely well. But I do, because to me, writing is so personal. Writing is very personal. It is almost more personal than me giving birth to my son. And so to share that, you know, share something so personal, something that I hold so dear to my heart, I always have a little bit of nervousness about presenting it to others because I'm worried that they might not get it. You know, it's not whether or not they like it, because in order to say that you didn't like something, you had to get it. But for someone to not understand what it is that I'm putting out there and what I'm saying, to me, that gives me a bit of, just a little bit of fear. Just a little bit. Not enough to keep me from sharing, but just enough to give me the shakes right before I open my mouth to speak.
That's a good thing. From every vantage point, whether you're a performing artist or an actor, stage, theater, the setting, public speaker, the energy, all of that, and it can be immobilizing, even as Tony Kay right now stumbles with his words. What I mean is that adrenaline, that emotion can go right to the throat, right to the brain, and you're like, when you know exactly what it is you need to do. So that energy, that's tremendous, that you feel deeply and that you're able to express yourself in writing. And I wanted to dwell on the point, Kimberly, because it's so important for parents, grandparents, those involved with young children, to bring them the books, sit with them, read them the books, give them the books, let them eat the books. But please find the literature that adds value as early as possible. At birth, they can begin holding a book and then encourage writing. The big tablets, okay, with the crayons, go ahead. Let them have fun with it. The sooner the better, as long as it's not the walls, okay? But yes, so Kimberly, you are a representative person of that type, that you really knew early in life that this was something you enjoyed, you were passionate about, you could express yourself, and those around you, your immediate family, that's their opinion of you, that you are opinionated and ambitious and intelligent. You are all the things they perceive you. And congratulations. Thank you for being our guest now worldwide on the Artist First Radio Network. We've been at this since 1996. We're one of the longest continuous running internet-only radio broadcasters on planet Earth, and we're just thrilled having the time of our life because so many more. As a matter of fact, 30% increase in listenership because of the Androids, the cell phones, that mobile capability. Listen, if you're online, great. If you're on your cell phone listening, be sure, get out there in the social network sites, tell people about Artist First Radio and the quality of the guests we have on, such as Kimberly Sherrell, Sherrelle, author of Silent Tears, 2009, and Wet Whisperers, 2012. The link provided at artistfirst.com, Sherrelle, Inc., INK.com. Just click on it, go over. You can see photographs of our lovely guest, learn more, and of course, buy the books. They're reasonably priced and they're of high quality. Kimberly, thank you for supporting the arts, for being my guest, Tony Kay. It's my privilege to introduce you, and thank you for taking this time to be with us.
Definitely for having me. Programs like this I really support, I really love, because art is such a key component to whatever avenue you want to go in life, that people don't realize that by promoting the arts, you are definitely increasing your child's intelligence, because it enables them to learn how to think outside of the box, think beyond what they just see, and give them that platform to sort of find a way to express themselves in a very positive fashion. So Artist, you know, First Radio, definitely I hope to continue to be able to listen to you for decades to come, because this is definitely something positive. I I love things like this. I'm always a big supporter of the arts.
I know. We're having a lot of fun.
Yes. Yes, you have a great job.
I do. It's a lot of fun. We enjoy it. And, of course, it wouldn't be much of a broadcast if we didn't have people like Dick Gregory and others coming on to support the arts on Artist First Radio. And, of course, Ben Vereen and Joan London and Jonathan Cain of Journey and Olivia Newton-John and Otis Williams. Did you see that on our homepage? The last surviving member of the legendary supergroup, The Temptations. So we're proud to have him on our network sharing. And then those who listen to CNN, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, the list is long, folks. There's 5,000 hours available free on demand, and soon Kimberly's show will be there too. So you might be listening, hey, don't worry. We'll have it up there under authors first, and alphabetically, just capture her link and share it with everyone you know. So there's no one needs to miss the show. And that's the great thing about what we're doing here at Artist First Radio. Kimberly, life moves on. You get through school. You have your hopes, your dreams. So what was next?
Honestly, I went to college, and my intention was to become a professional counselor. I wanted to be a licensed counselor and work with adolescents. That was actually
You wanted to help young people.
Yes, I did. Because I know that my adolescence was a very trying time for me. As it is for most, you know, teens, preteens, you know, that shift is difficult. And I wanted to be able to work with them and help them through a difficult time, give them a safe space to talk about their feelings, talk about what was going on. And so that was my goal. I graduated from undergrad with honors, went on to grad school, and easily, you know, just began to excel amongst, you know, my classmates. And I sat in my very last class, and I decided that I didn't want to be a counselor. I was in my very last class, and I remember my best friend was sitting to the left of me, and I looked at her, and I was like, I don't want to do this. And she was like, what? What were you talking about? You don't want to do this. And I was like, I don't want to be a counselor. I'm glad I came to graduate school. I am glad that I've learned all of these tools, but I need a bigger platform. You know, that's like, this is just a little too small for, I guess, really what I'm feeling that I want to do. And at that time, while I was in grad school, I was teaching 7th grade language arts. And so I was working with adolescents every single day. It was, you know, good days, bad days, but I loved every second of it. But even the classroom itself felt a little small to me. And
college and graduate school, the little girl grew up. College, graduate school. Now your mind is wrapping around a much bigger opportunity.
Yes, because I grew up in a small town, a very small town. To tell everybody how small it is, just to give you an idea, there are 6 traffic lights in the town that I live on, and they're not all on the major road. There is, you know, there are no big franchises there. I think the biggest thing in the town that I came from would be a Pizza Hut and Dollar General, to be exact. There's nothing pretty, you know, any bigger than that. But I knew that my voice needed to be heard a little more than this town where I was from, and to sit in an office all day and listen to, you know, a couple of clients a day, I started to think I wanted to do more. So I started doing a little soul searching, trying to really figure out what my purpose was. And there is an author, Sue Monk Kidd. She wrote Secret Life of the Bees, and it became a movie. And I remember when the movie hit, the name stuck out of my mind, because I remember when I went into the library a few years, you know, prior, installed a big display. Everybody in the town was so proud of her publishing the book because she's from the small town that I'm from. A lot of her family still lives there. And, you know, she wrote a book, and it didn't really seem feasible, you know, to me that the book would be much because, you know, this is a small town. She's from this same little small town. And when I saw that movie, it made me think that I really could do this, that my words could really make it outside of Georgia, could make it outside of the U.S. if I really stuck with it and put some hard work into it. And so with a little bit more motivation from some of my students, I locked myself in my apartment and I wrote my first book. It took me, I think, all of about 3 weeks to really get everything typed and organized. I had a big notebook full of poetry that I had been saving since the eighth grade when I really knew that poetry was truly the area of writing that I really loved. And I wanted to turn them all into a book. I wanted to tell my story about how I figured out who and what my purpose was. You know, who is Kimberly Sherrill? Who is she supposed to be? What is her purpose? And I started to tell that story. And so I wrote the book, and I began the tedious process of editing and publishing, and I put it out there to the world. And to my surprise, I was positively received. That I was so shocked by how many people really started coming up to me and talking about how much they enjoyed my words, that, you know, poetry I had written really helped them through a difficult time. It was humbling. It was so humbling to put this book out there for the world to judge and to get positive feedback. Everything that I got back about the book was not always positive, but the naysayers and the negativity about it, none of it actually came from anyone who read my book. It really came from people who just sort of heard what it was about, heard what was in it, and had never actually even had a conversation with me. So I didn't really give that a lot of energy, but for those that were coming to me telling me, you know, how much they enjoyed it, it helped them, they, you know, finally understood a poem that was written, it was moving to me, and I realized at that point that I had stepped into my purpose, that I was on the path now to be the person that I was designed to be when I was in the heavens, and it was wonderful, and I haven't looked back since then, honestly, questioning what I'm supposed to do. I now realize why all of those characters I wrote about as a child were so magical to me, because this was a talent that I was born with, that God gave me, and that now I'm using this talent, so I finally feel like I'm living.
It's a eureka moment when that light bulb clicks and everything in your life pools together, and the sun and the moon and the stars and divine providence all come together to realize, hey, I really like this. This is who I am, and I believe I'm making a contribution to humanity expressing it.
Yes, it is. That was exactly what it was. That light bulb finally went off, and there was a moment, and I can remember, I got ready to talk about the book, and I was standing at the podium in the library, and I exhaled, and it was as though I had been underwater for my entire life, and I came up for air finally and took that first breath and then just exhaled everything that had ever happened, all the negativity. I was just exhaling it all out. That weight was off, and I was like, by God, I can do this. I love this. This is not working. This is living.
Kimberly Sherrill, our guest on Authors First, Tony Kaye in the studio. Thanks for joining us worldwide. Poetess Kimberly Sherrill, Sherrille. Congratulations. Voted Albany State University's Distinguished Alumni for April 2012. Congratulations. And on the website, you have a photograph with Dr. Cornel West. I should know that name. I was there back in 84.
Mm-hmm. 84.
Was he there in 84?
You know, I don't know where he was in 84. I know where I was in 84. This, the picture that I took with him, this was right after I published. This was in 2009. I met him in Atlanta, but he's been active. He's been active, I think, since he stepped out of the womb, and working and touring and doing the books and things. But I would have to say that I am so, I don't even know what word I could use to describe how I feel about Dr. West. I love the man. I think he is so very intelligent. To be in his presence was a humbling experience for me, because this is someone who is working every day to not only talk about, you know, changing the world, but he's working every day to be the change. And I really admire Dr. West for everything that he has done. And meeting him, it was very, I don't know, I was in love from the second he started to speak until, you know, I left the building, because he has been all over the world. He's published many books. And I would have to say he showed so much enthusiasm when I talked to him about my book that I was actually taken back by it a little bit, because I'm thinking, you know, you've published several books and you've sold so many copies, and, you know, you've been on New York Times bestseller list and you've done all of these great things, and here I have this little poetry book, you know, but I still want to talk to you about it. And he was so gracious and so humble, and we talked and held the line up and talked about my book, and he demanded that he, you know, purchase a copy, that he get a copy right there on the spot. And I was like, okay, sure, I have a book right here. And I gave him the book and everything, and he was like, no, sister, you have to sign the book. And I was like, yes, definitely, we'll sign the book. And he wanted to take pictures, and we took several pictures. The one on the website is, I think, my favorite of the several that me and him took together. But talking to him and, you know, just listening to everything that he gave his speech, but he told me that he was so proud to see me living my dream and following the talent that God gave me. And it was just moving. It was completely moving. I can't wait until I have the opportunity to hear him speak again and to talk to him again, because he was humble. And I've encountered many celebrities that are not humble. They are not humble. They're not gracious. I lived in Atlanta for a few years, and so there are many celebrities that live there, and a lot of them are just, I don't really know what to say. They're very stuck up, a lot of them are. They're not humble, and many of them haven't done half of the positive things that Dr. West has done to, you know, to be a change in this world. They've done things simply to just make money and to make a name for themselves, and they are too on themselves to even say hello to a fan, you know, to even just acknowledge that someone else is around them. And so for him to be as humble as he was, I was definitely taken back. But I would have to say that it was definitely the highlight of my publishing experience for the first book, was to actually be able to share it with him.
That is just a tremendous opportunity that occurred for both of you. I know he would have immediately recognized on your pages something gifted and wonderful, because he is such a bright gentleman. Thank
yes.
you for sharing that. This I love your website. You have the total package going now.
Well, thank you.
And it's so important, authors, to do what Kimberly has done here. Make that connection with the audience. And I have teased you all. Now we're going to hear some reading from Kimberly, okay, audience? But I wanted all of you to share and understand the backdrop of her material, where she came from in geography, and all of that plays an important role for a poet. Perhaps, I think more so myself, of course I could be wrong, but for myself, I think that poetry is different than a novel. In a novel, I can invent a lot of things and situations and so forth, but in poetry, it becomes an intimate part of who we are. Don't you think so?
I would definitely have to agree with you on that. Poetry is very personal, is very intimate. And a lot of it, you cannot just manufacture from nothing. There has to be some type of
context.
Yes.
A context, an emotion, a reality that's going on in the world that can be synthesized in this fashion, okay, and made sense of, I hope. Do you find that you're trying to communicate meaning and objectives for the reader of your material?
I find that I really and truly my goal is always to be transparent in my poetry, to really be honest about what is happening around me and what is happening to me, for my reader to be able to identify on some level with what I'm saying and learn from my mistakes, learn from the things that went right, learn from the things that did not go exactly as planned, and to be hopeful about a brighter day.
How about favorites? Are poems like children?
Yes, they are. They are. They're definitely like children. I would say my firstborn is Silent Tears. My secondborn is my son, Steven. And my thirdborn was Wet Whispers. It's definitely like children. It's a process. There's an incubation period. And then to actually begin to put it out there, that's the birthing process. And from there, you nurture your work. You want your work to grow. So it is 100% like children.
Because a concept can be developed, perhaps, into a paragraph, or may find a little place here and but become a full-blown poem over there.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
So we have limited time. I want the audience to appreciate your material. Can you offer one of your children?
I will definitely offer one. I have one that is on my mind, that has been on my mind since we began to speak, that I would like to share with your audience, if everyone is okay with it. It's titled Funny. As I stood before you for the first time, somehow my heart knew it would not be the last time. When legs spread and tears were shed, it's funny how she looks just like you, but laughs just like me. Oh, how I wish you could see what I see. Thinking of the last time we shared a cry, it's funny. We thought we had a lifetime. And though that's what we got, it's not quite what we thought, but how long is a lifetime? How do you measure is value? The end of forever is what we fought. Sipping on tea between the sheets, oh, how life was so sweet. Forever grateful to Master I will be for uniting you and me. And though I miss the days when our heart would beat as one, my heart did not lie. It was not the last time. It's funny how she looks just like you. And that poem is actually in my second book.
May I say something?
Yes.
Wow. 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 Not only wow, but you could read that poem over and over again. there's a lot that you can identify in any period or situation, whether you, if you've gone through an intimate relationship that is now being reflected in a child.
Yeah, definitely. And what's interesting is that I birthed this poem before I had a child, before I was even in the relationship, before I was even in a relationship with someone, and I didn't know where the poem came from, but it flowed out of me so naturally. And while I was pregnant, the person that is very dear to my heart, my great aunt, she passed when I was 7 months pregnant. And it was very sudden. I went home for the holidays and announced my marriage and everything because I hadn't told anyone I was married. And I announced it, and she already had met, you know, who was my husband. She had met him, and she loved him. And when I got ready to head back home, she gave me the tightest hug, and she said that, "I know you're going to be okay now." She's like, "I'm so happy to see you happy." And a week later, she passed, and it was sudden and unexpected. And after my son was born, a few months later, as he began to grow and develop, I noticed he has this very happy nature about himself. He's the happiest kid, whether he's sick, sleepy, he is a happy kid. He's always smiling. And that was 100% her. She was a very happy person. She was extremely genuine and kind. And she loved jewelry. She loved jewelry, always wearing necklaces and rings. And my son loves to wear necklaces. He walks around all the time with these little ugly Mardi Gras beads from a couple of years ago that are still lingering around the house. He wears them all the time. He wears them to bed. He wants to wear medallions or whatever he can around his neck. And I know it came from her. It came from that happy, jewelry-loving spirit that she has. He carries it on. And when I got ready to publish this book, I came across this poem again, and I thought about it. I was like, wow, that's exactly what that poem is about. It's about how she is living on through my son, and I miss her so much. I miss her all the time. She was very dear to me. I lived with her for many, many years. And, you know, knowing that he's carrying a little bit of her happy spirit around with him, it comforts me. There are days when he'll just out the blue run over to me and give me a hug, and he's smiling. And I just feel, I feel that warmth. I feel that connection. And it has been, you know, so soothing to know that she has not left me completely.
Insightful.
Yes.
Not having the experience, able to relate to it. Those are attributes of a poet.
Well, thank you.
And thank you for following that expression, putting it to paper so graciously, in your experience, your background, and for overcoming perhaps an early age, a timidity, now able to forcefully express, articulate your views, and for sharing, making our world a better place. How old were you, or I shouldn't say that, was that poem written some years ago?
It was written... I think about 3 years before she even passed. This was 3 years before I knew I would have a son, 3 years before I was, you
yes.
know, thinking about marriage.
Wow. And so, once again, understanding those internal mechanisms of emotion and reflection, mm-hmm. having the ability to empathize and wanting to help, that's what led you into the helping professions. You wanted to do that and be engaged with young people and assisting them. That was motivated you through college and graduate school. It's still finding expression through your poetry.
Yes.
Now, you have two works presently.
Yes.
How did you go about deciding their content in the sense of organization regarding your first release? And what did you learn from that that you carried over into your second release?
Well, the first book, I really wanted to tell my journey. And so I really didn't want to just be, you know, generic with a chapter one or just do just no chapters and just let it all be poetry. I really wanted to think about the different phases that I personally went through to get to the person that I was meant to be. And so I realized that there were basically three phases that I really went through to get to my end journey. And the first one was a phase of me pretending to be happy and me thinking that I was happy. And so the first part of the book, Silent Tears, is happy with a question mark. And I decided that the question mark was necessary because as I look back on that phase of my life, I'm scratching my head because I'm not sure if I was happy. In my mind during that time, I thought I was, but looking back, I'm not sure that I really was happy. And that's what I want my readers to do when they're in that part of the book. I really want them to question themselves, to look in the mirror and reflect. So that was the first part of the book, and all of the poems that go along during that time are in that section. The second one was a phase of anger. And this really came on later in my life after I realized that there was a lot of things that I had done that I was currently doing that I was not happy about. And I was angry with myself because I'm in control of me. And I didn't like what I was seeing. And so the second part of the book is angry with an exclamation point. And I think that really speaks for itself. The third phase that I'm very happy that I was able to reach is rebirth with a period, because I think that going through those previous two phases and now I realize who I'm supposed to be, so I sort of reinvented Kimberly Sherrill to just be who she's supposed to be, and so I'm just me, period, and that's all I can be. I can only be myself, and so that was that first, those really tell that journey in Silent Tears. There's an extra chapter in there that is not necessarily relevant to my journey, but there's a tribute chapter where there were poems that I written for classmates that had passed along the way, family members that had passed, and family members that I really loved and wanted to write and show them, you know, in print how much they meant to me. And so I decided that it was necessary to add those things in because I always want to give people their flowers while they're alive, and for the classmates that had fallen, it was really for their parents, so that there would always be, you know, a little bit something about, you know, their children out there in the world, you know, always and forever, because books are forever. And so that is really the journey of Silent Tears. Wet Whispers is really about that trusting your own voice. Now that you know who you are, you don't let anyone change who you are. You don't let anyone make you feel bad about being the person that you're supposed to be. You don't let anyone speak for you. And this book really has chapters that are about things that begin to sort of smother me. I went through a life change. I moved from, you know, Atlanta, Georgia to Grayson, Kentucky. I moved from a city to a small town. I'm married. I have a husband that plays football. I have a son. And I'm getting lost in this world. And in addition to that, the person that was so near and dear to me, I've now lost her. So I have grief on top of all of those things. And so that's how Wet Whispers got organized. It's the poetry that goes along with the different things that I found smothering me that I know my readers could identify with that could possibly be smothering them. And so I put all of those poems together there. There's a chapter called Sex, Lies, and Relationships, because I know that relationships are difficult, and people deal with relationships and different things, but my own growth of my relationship of now being married, that was one of the things that I found to sort of, you know, take away my voice a little bit. I needed to find my place in my marriage. I needed to find my place as a mother. And grief, depression, and denial is another, because I found myself being depressed about the passing of my aunt. I was in a bit of denial about how I felt, because I thought, you know, it's been a year, I should be okay by now, that I had to sort of play that role. And the very end is all about just listening who you are. That section of the book is called Speak Up. And because that's really what I want readers to do, is to be heard. Just accept who you are and be heard. And so I realized that, you know, I have a very unique voice as a poet. I have a very unique voice as a writer. And that I cannot allow situations or individuals to change my voice. I need to just accept that this is who I am and just go with it. And that's exactly what I want readers to do.
Kimberly Sherrell, thank you for joining us on the Artist First Radio Network. Tony Kaye in the studio. It's been my privilege to introduce you to our worldwide audience. Before I let you go, anyone out there on planet Earth you'd like to say hello to, or any final remarks?
Well, yes, I definitely want to say hello to my son, Seven. He is the joy of my life. I know he's upstairs listening, probably not exactly sure what's going on. And to my husband, Jordan, who's at work, he'll be listening later. And I just want to say to everyone that is listening now and everyone that will be listening later, I just want to say that you are a very uniquely wonderful individual. And I hope that you will always follow your purpose in life.